Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Nehemiah chapter 6. I'm going to do the entire chapter today, verses 1 through 19. We will call this chapter Conspiracy Against Nehemiah. Our context is this. In the last chapter, chapter 5, we see Nehemiah helping the poor out of his back pocket, out of his own wallet. And in the previous chapter, we see that the walls have been rebuilt, which is the reason that Nehemiah had come back to Jerusalem from Susa in Persia. So we start now in Nehemiah 6, 1 through 4. Now when it was reported to Sanballat, Tobiah, to Geshem the Arab, and to the rest of our enemies that I had rebuilt the wall and that no breach remained in it, although at that time I had not set up the doors and the gates, then Sanballat and Geshem sent a message to me saying, "Come, let us meet together at Chepharim in the plain of Ono." But they were planning to harm me. So I sent messengers to them saying, "I am doing a great work and I cannot come down. Why should the work stop while I leave it and come down to you?" They sent messages to me 4 times in this matter, and I answered them in the same way. Now, the wall had been rebuilt, I said, but to be more precise, it had been rebuilt except that the doors hadn't been hung yet, but all the breaches in the wall had been repaired. Now, this stage of the construction had been reported to the 3 governors of Samaria, the northern tribe, the former northern 10 tribes of Israel, whose capital was the city Samaria. And these 3 leaders were Sanballat, he was from Moab, Horonaim in Moab, Tobiah, who was from Ammon. Moab, of course, is east of the Dead Sea. Ammon is east of the Jordan River, right north of the Dead Sea. And to Geshem the Arab. Arab is all that land between Damascus, well, between the Tigris and between the Euphrates and the Jordan River. And these 3 have showed up many times in the book of Nehemiah so far. Now, Sanballat and friends, Sanballat was probably the leader of the 3 officials. Sanballat had already tried to threaten Nehemiah, had tried to set up an ambush to where he was going to come in at night through the walls and take over Jerusalem. But Nehemiah, with his military preparations, had foiled that. We saw that in Nehemiah chapter 4. And so Sanballat realizes that now he cannot use military opposition. He has to use stratagem, diplomacy. So he says, "Let's talk about this. Nehemiah, let's go meet together at Chepharim in the plain of Ono." Now, Chepharim could be translated as one of the villages. NIV translates it that way. Then I mean, note margin says, or in Chepharim, an actual place. As a matter of fact, in Joshua 18, we see that Chepharah is an actual place, and that's pretty close. In the plain of Ono, that was in Benjamin, 1 Chronicles 8. The sons of Elpal were Eber, Misham, and Shemed, who built Ono and Lod. So Ono is a place in a plain in Benjamin right north of Jerusalem, because that's between Samaria and Jerusalem. Well, this treacherous diplomacy comes after the failure of these 3 to stop the building of the wall. Let's read in Nehemiah 2:10 about these 3. When Sanballat the Horonite, Horonaim is a place in Moab, when Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite official heard that someone, namely Nehemiah, had come to seek the well-being of the Israelites, they were greatly displeased. And then 9 verses later in Nehemiah 2, when Sanballat the Horonite, Tobiah the Ammonite official, and Geshem the Arab heard about this, i.e. heard about the plans to rebuild the wall, they mocked and despised us and said, "What is this you are doing? Are you rebelling against the king?" In other words, against the Persian king, Artaxerxes. So from the get-go, they were upset about this because they were afraid that the Jews were going to set up a power center there that would overshadow them, and Persia would give preference to Jerusalem rather than Samaria, and they would be nothing burgers. One little point here, notice that Sanballat and Geshem sent a message to Nehemiah in verse 2, but Tobiah is left out. I don't know why he was left out, but he was. Now, Nehemiah announces in verse 2 that these Samaritan leaders, Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem, were planning to harm him. How did he know that? Well, it could be just because he knew their character, the general character and behaviors. It wouldn't surprise me at all that he knew that they were trying to harm him. Or maybe he had actual intelligence of their design. Somebody might have revealed to him, "These guys are getting ready to nail you, Nehemiah. Don't go up there and parley with them." So what Nehemiah did, he decided he would try to deceive them. Verse 3, so I, Nehemiah, sent messengers to them saying, I'm doing a great work and I cannot come down. I'm busy, in other words, I'm not going to come meet you. Now, Nehemiah did not show any open contempt. In fact, he sent his own messengers in return. He didn't even use Sanballat and Geshem's messengers. He sent his own messengers and very politely said, I'm busy, I can't come. Well, I'm sure that Sanballat and friends knew why Nehemiah wasn't come. I am sure they knew that he was suspicious of them for good reason. In his message back to Sanballat and friends, Nehemiah did not take note of the real reason he did not want to come, namely that he feared Sanballat and friends' treachery. If he had said that, if he had said, I'm afraid that you are going to try to kill me, it's likely that they would indeed have tried to kill him. They'd say, okay, he knows what's going on, so we've got no point in trying to deceive him anymore, so let's just go take him out. Now, Nehemiah didn't want that. He needed to play for time because those walls, the doors were not hung in the walls yet. So Jerusalem was in no condition to bear an attack. So he's playing for time here. Now, notice that Nehemiah has told a half-truth in order to deceive. Should we condemn him for doing that? Of course not. This is war. This is diplomacy. There are some super spiritual Christians who will say, oh, no, they shouldn't have done that. God is not a God that he should lie. Listen, God has no lies in him, but God is not being threatened in any way. He's omnipotent. But down here in this sinful world, sometimes you have to use stratagem in order to defeat a treacherous attack. We go down to Nehemiah 6, verses 5 through 6. Then Sanballat sent his servant to me in the same manner a fifth time. I forgot to point out that in verse 4, Sanballat tried four times to get Nehemiah to come to Chephirim in the plain of Ono. Four times. They sent messages to me four times. He turned them down all four times. So Sanballat, I'm sure, is getting pretty irritated. In verse 5, Sanballat sent his servant to me in the same manner a fifth time with an open letter in his hand. Now, this is different. This is an open letter, not just a sealed letter. In it was written, it is reported among the nations, and Geshemu says, that you and the Jews are planning to rebel. Therefore, you are rebuilding the wall, and you are to be their king, according to these reports. One minor detail here in verse 5, Sanballat sent his servant. There's no mention of Tobiah and Geshem, his two comrades in arms. John Gill speculates that the reason for that is, as some people think, that Sanballat was pretending to be more friendly to Nehemiah than Geshem the Arab and Tobiah the Ammonite, and so therefore he's riding alone. Well, I don't think that's true, because as we're going to see when I read you some quotes from Adam Clark, this open letter was a sign of contempt, not special friendship, more than my other two colleagues. This letter was showing, I have had it with you, Nehemiah. You have spurned my advances four times after I have sent you four letters, and now I'm going to get down and dirty. I think the reason the other two were not mentioned is because Sanballat was the top dog. He was the guy in charge, and the other two were minor, or at least lesser, officials. Now, this fifth letter was an open letter. What does that mean? Well, as Adam Clark says, it was an insult to Nehemiah. Let me read you what Clark says about letters sent between governors in the East, for example, as in the Persian Empire. Quote, letters sent to chiefs and governors in the East are always carefully folded up and put in costly silken bags, and these carefully sealed, the circumstances thus marked to show the contempt he, Sanballat, had for Nehemiah, the circumstance that the letter was open. Here's a quote from Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown. Quote, in Eastern Asia, the Persians make up their letters in the form of a roll about 6 inches long, and a bit of paper is fastened around it with gum and sealed with an impression of ink, which resembles our printer's ink, but is not so thick. So in other words, there was a roll of paper with kind of like an ink stamp on the crease where the top and the bottom of the roll came together so that you could tell if the ink seal was broken that the letter had been opened. J.F. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown continues, letters were, and are still, sent to persons of distinction in a bag or purse, and even to equals they are enclosed, the tie being made with a colored ribbon. But to inferiors, or persons who are to be treated contemptuously, the letters were sent open. that is not enclosed in a bag. Nehemiah, accustomed to the punctilious ceremonial of the Persian court, would at once notice the want of the usual formality and know that it was from designed disrespect. The strain of the letter was equally insolent. Here's another quote from a commentator whose name I unfortunately failed to write down. Quote, official correspondence of the day was written on papyrus or leather parchment, tied and sealed with clay. This unsealed letter was clearly meant not only to menace Nehemiah, but as an opener public letter to fuel rumors about Nehemiah's intentions. And Gregory Brown at Bible.org says this, this open letter would not only have been read before Nehemiah, but probably all along the way till it reached Nehemiah. In other words, Sanballat is trying to really screw Nehemiah. Because if Nehemiah is seen by the Persian king Artaxerxes as a rebel, Nehemiah is going to get executed by said Persian king. Well, in the letter, in verse 6, it is reported among the nations, and Gashmu says, who is this Gashmu? Well, the NIV note says that the Hebrew Gashmu is a variant of Geshem. In other words, that's Geshem the Arab. And so to summarize the contents of this open letter, Nehemiah, the reason you are rebuilding the wall is because you are planning to rebel against Persia. That's not a illogical proposition, really. Actually, Nehemiah was rebuilding the wall for defense, but his motives were perverted and changed to Nehemiah is building the wall for offense because he's going to offensively rebel against Persia. We go down to Nehemiah 6, verses 7 through 9. This open letter continues to read this way in verse 7. Nehemiah, you have even set up the prophets in Jerusalem to proclaim on your behalf, there is a king in Judah. And that's the end of the letter. So the letter also said that Nehemiah is not only building a wall, but he has hired prophets to proclaim that he, Nehemiah, is a king. Now this is bald-faced lie. So then that's the end of the note. And then Sanballat continues to speak to Sanballat's servant, messenger, continues to speak to Nehemiah and says, these rumors will be heard by the king. So come, let us confer together, the king Artaxerxes in Susa in Persia. And that means that you, Nehemiah, will be in trouble. So come, let us confer together. Then I, Nehemiah, replied to the servant, there is nothing to these rumors you are spreading. You are inventing them in your own mind. Verse 9. For they were all trying to intimidate us, saying, they will become discouraged in the work, and it will never be finished. But now, my God, strengthen me. This wall is built, but it's no good without gates in the doorways, because then opposing troops could just walk right through the open doors. So Nehemiah still got to finish this wall, and now he's got a bunch of treachery to deal with. These rumors, say Nehemiah, he tells Sanballat, by means of Sanballat's servant, he says, these rumors that you're spreading about me wanting to be a king and wanting to rebel against Persia, you are inventing them in your own mind, which, of course, is exactly true. And the ironic thing is, the note that Sanballat sent said, you, Nehemiah, are setting up prophets in Jerusalem to proclaim you're king. That's ironic because in verse 12, we're going to see that Tobiah had been hiring prophets to prophesy against Nehemiah. Tobiah had been tampering with and corrupting, hiring prophets to discourage Nehemiah. We'll see that in just a minute. Now, Sanballat was putting Nehemiah at great risk here, because once a Persian king hears that one of his governors is about to rebel, that is really bad business, because the next thing you know, a Persian army will show up and will destroy your city and execute the person who started the rebellion. We go now to Nehemiah 6, verses 10 through 13. When I entered the house of Shemaiah, the son of Delaiah, son of Mehatabel, who was confined at home, Shemaiah was confined at home. Delaiah and Mehatabel are his ancestors. We don't care about them. When I entered the house of Shemaiah, who was confined at home, Shemaiah said, let us meet together in the house of God. Talking to Nehemiah, let us, you and me, Nehemiah, meet together in the house of God within the temple, and let us close the doors of the temple, for they are coming to kill you, and they are coming to kill you at night. But I said, should a man like me flee? Nehemiah says this, should a man like me flee, and could one such as I go into the temple to save his life? I will not go in. Then I perceived that surely God had not sent him and not sent Shemaiah. But he, Shemaiah, uttered his prophecy against me because Tobiah and Sanballat had hired him. He was hired for this reason, that I might become frightened and act accordingly and sin, so they might have an evil report in order that they could reproach me. Now this Shemaiah, into whose house Nehemiah went, Nehemiah must have had a good opinion of Shemaiah at first. John Gill speculates or says that he was a priest of the course of Deliah. He gets that from 1 Chronicles 24:18, the 23rd course of priests for Deliah. Jameson Fawcett Brown said this man was the son of a priest who was an intimate and confidential friend of Nehemiah. I don't know how Jameson Fawcett Brown knows that, but this guy was a priest corrupted by money, Sanballat's money. So that's why Nehemiah went into his house. Shemaiah was a priest, an important person, and I suspect Shemaiah might have even invited Nehemiah to come. So he gets there and he hears Shemaiah said, we need to go run into the temple. Before we get into that, let's look at why verse 10 in Nehemiah 6 says that Shemaiah was confined at home. Well, as the NIV Study Bible spells out the plot that Shemaiah had, it worked this way. Shemaiah is saying, look, I am hiding at home because I'm worried that Sanballat's going to come and wipe me out. I'm a priest, you know. I don't want to get destroyed by the enemies. And so I am hiding at home, restricted in my home, so I cannot go out. And now I, Shemaiah, want to convince you, Nehemiah, that you are in the same danger as I, Shemaiah, is in. We need to both go to the temple for safety. Now, why go to the temple? Well, that's just a shorthand way of saying going to the altar to put your hands on the horns of the altar, because that was a typical place that people in the Old Testament went to when they got themselves in mortal danger. The altar was a known place of safety from those threatened with execution. I'm going to read you four scriptures that show that clearly. Exodus 21:14. If a person schemes and willfully acts against his neighbor to murder him, you must take him from my altar to be put to death. Well, why would he be at the altar? Well, because he's grabbing hold of the horns, hoping that he will not get capital punishment executed upon him. 1 Kings 1, 50-51, Adonijah was afraid of Solomon. Adonijah was the son of David who wanted to inherit, and he started a revolt when David died. And so Adonijah and Solomon were fighting each other for the kingdom of Israel. Adonijah was afraid of Solomon, so he got up and went to take hold of the horns of the altar. Why? Because he was hoping Solomon wouldn't kill him. Verse 51, 1 Kings 1. It was reported to Solomon, look, Adonijah fears King Solomon, and he has taken hold of the horns of the altar, saying, let King Solomon first swear to me that he will not kill his servant with the sword. 1 Kings 2:28. The news reached Joab, since he had supported Adonijah, but not Absalom. Absalom, of course, was on Solomon's side. Joab fled to the Lord's tabernacle. This is before the temple, of course, before the temple had been built. Joab fled to the Lord's tabernacle and took hold of the horns of the altar. The tabernacle at this time, I think it was at Nob. This is before Solomon had wiped out the priests there and moved the tabernacle to Gibeon. But Joab goes to the Lord's tabernacle and took hold of the horns of the altar because he knows he's about to get whacked. 2 Kings 11:15, then Jehoiada the priest ordered the commanders of hundreds in charge of the army, take her, this is Athaliah, out between the ranks. Athaliah is the wicked queen who had to be executed. Take her out between the ranks and put to death by the sword anyone who follows her. For the priest had said, she is not to be put to death in the Lord's temple. You don't kill people in the temple. And that's why people would grab hold of the horns of the altar. And so what Shemaiah is saying to Nehemiah, he's saying, look, let's go into the temple, grab hold of the horns, and Sanballat will not go into such a holy place and kill us. That was his design. That was his scheme. Nehemiah immediately saw through the scheme. He says, no, I ain't going. Should a man like me flee? Should I go into the temple to save his life? Rhetorical questions requiring no for an answer. I will not go in, he says in verse 11. There were two reasons why he said he was not going to the temple. One, it wasn't honorable. He said he would actually sin. If you see that word here, sin, in verse 13, Sanballat had hired Shemaiah so that Nehemiah would become frightened and sin by going into the temple. We'll talk in just a little bit why that would be considered a sin. But also, it wasn't safe. Can you really think Sanballat would stop from killing Nehemiah just because he's holding onto the horns of the altar of Yahweh? I don't think so. He would have gone in there and taken him out. So that's two reasons why Nehemiah does not listen to the false prophecy of Shemaiah and the lousy advice. Now, Nehemiah probably had not found out that Shemaiah had been hired until after this whole situation. Eventually, he did find out and tells us here in verse 13, he was hired. Well, verse 12, Tobiah and Sanballat had hired him. Now, let's look in verse 11 and see why Nehemiah considered it a sin to go into the temple and grab a hold of the horns. Now, here are four reasons why it would have been a sin. These reasons are not mutually exclusive. This one is from the NIV Study Bible. Nehemiah did not want to be lured into the area where only priests could go because Nehemiah wasn't a priest. If you're going to grab a hold of the altar, that's where priests and Levites could go there, but Nehemiah was neither. So he would be breaking the Levitical law. Option number two from the NIV Study Bible. Nehemiah would be shown to be living in fear instead of trusting God. Retreating to the temple would destroy him as a leader in the eyes of the people. Option number three, this is from John Gill. Nehemiah would look like he was guilty of the rebellion and treason he was charged with. There was an open letter circulating all throughout Jerusalem and the surrounding areas accusing Nehemiah of rebellion. And so now it looks like, must have been true because he's hiding. If he was not in rebellion, why is he scared to death that he's going to get executed? So Nehemiah could not flee to the temple because that would be an admission of guilt, an admission that he was a traitor to Artaxerxes of Persia. Another reason why Nehemiah could not have retreated to the temple is because Sanballat would have immediately taken over as governor of Israel, of Judah. He would have just marched right on into Jerusalem and said, okay, Nehemiah has fled the field. I'm governor now. If you really think about it, this plot by Shemaiah was kind of stupid. Nehemiah would have really had to be dumb in order to go along with this idea. We go to Nehemiah 6, verse 14. Jeremiah is now praying to God, remember, O my God, Tobiah and Sanballat according to these works of theirs, and also Noadiah the prophetess and the rest of the prophets who were trying to frighten me. So it wasn't just Shemaiah who had been hired by Tobiah. Apparently, he had also tried to suborn Noadiah, a prophetess, and the rest of the prophets, unnamed prophets who were trying to frighten me. So poor old Nehemiah, he not only had political pressure put on him, now he's got religious pressure putting on him. Now, here's a good point to note, application point. Since most Christian religious establishments and structures want to suck up to whoever's in power, to whichever political regime is in power, don't listen to them. State churches, don't listen to them. Churches that have a lot of influence with the current administration, don't listen to them, necessarily. Now, who these prophets were and who Noadiah was are unknown. And as I said, Noadiah and the other prophets were probably hired by Sanballat. We go to Nehemiah 6, verses 15 and 16. So the wall was completed on the 25th of the month Elul in 52 days. When all our enemies heard of it and all the nations surrounding us saw it, they lost their confidence, for they recognized that this work had been accomplished with the help of our God. Now Elul is the 6th month of the sacred year, the 12th month of the civil year, corresponding to August and September of our years, of our months, I should say. Now, this means that the Jews had to build that wall in the hottest part of the year, 52 days backed up from Elul the 25th, which is somewhere in September. You back 52 days back of there, and you into July and August in the Middle East. And, of course, they had to build while they held their weapons to guard against military invasions while they were building. But nonetheless, they finished in 52 days. Now, that's very fast. How did Nehemiah accomplish that? Well, he had mobilized the whole population to work. You recall in chapter 2, he was telling everybody was working, common people, nobles, priests. Another reason they built so fast was because of the ardor of the Jews in building the wall. They were very motivated to build. And also, the wall was not entirely knocked down. In some places, they only had to repair the breaches in the wall, not the wall itself, because the Babylonians would not have taken time to knock down the whole wall. They just needed a breach in the wall to get through. And also, there were probably many building materials left lying around since the wall had been destroyed. Now, some of those building materials had been burnt. I talked about that in a previous audio, but not all of them would have been burnt. Limestone, when it gets burnt, when it gets heated, it will get soft and lose its strength, but it is stone. It doesn't burn like wood does, so I'm sure there was materials left around from which the Jews could have gathered building materials. Now, the starting and ending points are not exactly known of this 52 days. I don't know why. You can take 25 minus 52. Seems like you can find it, but Gill says you can't. Some people are skeptical that the Jews could have actually done this, despite all the natural reasons that I just gave. Well, the ultimate reason was because God had helped them. That's how they managed to pull this off. Now, when all the Jews' enemies heard about the completion of the wall, all the nations surrounding the Jews in Jerusalem, that would be the Moabites, the Ammonites, the Syrians, the Philistines, they lost their confidence. I think they're Philistines still there. Maybe not. But they might have gotten carried off by Assyria too back in the 8th century. But the polyglot population that was left by the Assyrians, the Samaritans, the former northern 10 tribes of Israel, all of these nations are surrounding Israel, and they saw it and they say, whoa, only God could have done this. They recognize that this work had been accomplished with the help of our God. As the NIV Study Bible says, the Jews' neighbors saw the completion of the wall as nothing less than a miracle, especially since they were under military pressure as they built the wall, I would point out, and the fact that the wall was built in 52 days without being destroyed by the surrounding enemies was a sign that the Jews had God's favor. The surrounding nations now realized that they had been opposing God as well as the Jews, and that's why they were afraid. That's why they had lost their confidence. We go now to Nehemiah 6, verses 17 through 19, and we will finish this chapter. Also in those days, many letters went from the nobles of Judah to Tobiah, and Tobiah's letters came to them. For many in Judah were bound by oath to him, to Tobiah, because he was the son-in-law of Shechaniah, the son of Arah, and his son Jehohanan had married the daughter of Meshulam, the son of Berechiah. Moreover, they were speaking about his good deeds in my presence and reported my words to him. Then Tobiah sent letters to frighten me. Now, who are these nobles of Judah mentioned in verse 17? They are collaborationists. Big shots in Judah who had betrayed Nehemiah and who were giving intelligence to Tobiah about what was going on in Jerusalem, about the progress of the wall. And then Tobiah would send letters back to these treacherous nobles saying, whatever, give me more information. In verse 17, this was going on in those days. What days? While the wall was being built. So Tobiah and his friends, Sanballat and Geshem the Arab, they knew the status of the wall, and they knew about the military preparations. They knew what was going on. In other words, there was a fifth column right there in Judah betraying Nehemiah. Verse 18, many in Judah were bound by oath to Tobiah, because Tobiah was the son-in-law of Shechaniah, the son of Arah. Well, who is Shechaniah, the son of Arah? Well, Arah was one of the families that had come back to Jerusalem from Babylon in the exile. We read that in Ezra 2:5 in the list of the exiles, the exilees, returning from Babylonia. Arah was one of them. Well, Arah has a son, Arah has a son, Shechaniah. Shechaniah has a daughter, and that daughter marries Tobiah. So he's married right into the family of Jews who had returned under Ezra. And not only he had done that, but then he and that daughter of Shechaniah had a son named Jehohanan, and Jehohanan had married the daughter of Meshulam. Well, who's Meshulam? Meshulam was one of the prominent Jews working on the wall to fix the wall. We read in Nehemiah 3:4, we're going to see here in this verse, three people who were fixing the wall, and Meshulam is one of them. Next to them, Meremoth, the son of Uriah, the son of Hakaz, made repairs. And next to him, Meshulam, the son of Berechiah, the son of Meshezabel, made repairs. So Meshulam was trusted with the repair of the wall, and yet his daughter, Meshulam's daughter, had married Tobiah's son. Meshulam's daughter, whose name is not given, had married Jehohanan, the son of Tobiah. So Tobiah is married in not only in his generation, He marries a Jewish woman, and then he gets his son to marry a Jewish woman. So Tobiah, it appears from this, didn't mind Jews living in the area. He married into the Jewish people living there, but Tobiah did not want the Jews to become a political force, as the NIV Study Bible says. That would diminish him politically, of course. Tobiah's main power came from his connection with the Ammonites. Remember, Tobiah is an Ammonite, which, of course, is the pagan tribe. If you go north of Jerusalem and hit the Jordan River, then cross the Jordan River and go east, that's where the Ammonites are. So Tobiah was connected with the Ammonites, and he was also connected with collaborationist Jews, treacherous Jews. So this is one more problem for Nehemiah. Not only does he have external enemies, he's got internal traitors. This Nehemiah boy, he bit off a lot when he came back to build the walls. He had to have been directed by God. Now the fact that he had married a Jewish woman and his son had married a Jewish woman, this shows how fast Jews would intermarry with heathens given the chance, and how concerned Jewish leaders were about that problem. You recall in Ezra 9:3, when Ezra heard about this intermarriage, I, Ezra, tore my garment and my robe and pulled some of the hair from my head and my beard and sat down appalled. And then he forced the people in Israel who had married Jews, who had married pagans, to divorce those pagans. But apparently, that was a long time ago. That was in 458. We are now in 445/444, about 14 years or so later. And we've got people still married into the pagans' families. In verse 19, Nehemiah recounts that Tobiah has sent letters to frighten Nehemiah. That's in addition to these letters he's been getting from Sanballat, the letter that said he was a traitor, and Tobiah's just probably threatening him. We're going to turn you over to the Persians unless you stop building this wall. So Nehemiah was under extraordinary political pressure, as well as religious pressure. But he stood tall. Notice that these false Jews in verse 19 were speaking about his, i.e. Tobiah's, good deeds in my presence. They were telling Nehemiah, hey, Tobiah's a good guy. He's not going to hurt you. And then as soon as they did that, they reported Nehemiah's words to Tobiah. So Nehemiah was dealing with internal treachery. And then Tobiah sent letters to frighten him when Tobiah realized that he couldn't be seduced, that Nehemiah could not be seduced. He says, okay, well, I just threatened him. At any rate, despite all this conspiracy and opposition against Nehemiah in chapter 6, in chapter 7, our next audio, we will see that the wall is finished. I hope you stay tuned for that happy event, and I hope you enjoyed this audio.